Jason won that match against Shane, and Shane's the king, and he went up and stood in his chair. You don't stand in the king's chair.
Welcome back to another episode of the Cue It Up podcast, and I am super excited to be joined by Emily Frazier, who I am also going to be seeing in about 12 hours when I make my way out to Moscone. So, hi in advance, and I'll see you again in about 12 hours.
Thanks for having me. Sounds good. So, when do you arrive in?
Yeah, I guess tomorrow morning. So, I guess I lied about 12 hours. I will be in the air in 12 hours. So, I arrive tomorrow at about 11 a.m., I think.
Local time, of course. How exciting. So you'll be, so that means that you can attend our press conference on Sunday.
Talk me into it. I'll see you there. What's the press conference going to be covering?
Well, it's just an opportunity for both of the teams to obviously sit down, have a bit of trash talk in front of some local media and obviously the media within the industry as well. And we historically used to do a cocktail party, which was nice and it was fancy, but to be completely honest, it was a total waste of money. And it was just a chance to announce the first lineup for day one, to bring the teams in and then get all nice and dressed and to obviously, invite some of our, key sponsors and things like that. But it's time we professionalize this game and take it to the next level. And, our first steps was to hold, a press conference, because that's exactly what should be happening. It's a bit unfortunate that it lands on a Sunday, but, we have obviously good relationships with MGM here, and so we have some local media attending, and it's just to draw some attention to Monday. And like I said, it will be questions to each of the captains, the players on the team, so hopefully we'll see some trash talk ahead of Monday the 25th.
What is Jason Shaw doing on Team Europe if he's not there for the trash talk, right?
Exactly. That's literally the only reason why he's on the team. No, I'm joking.
Well, you can say that and it's totally fine, because I know you would say the same thing if Jason Shaw was right next to you. Watching
100%.
Watching you two go back and forth on Facebook is a sight to behold. And I'm not going to lie. I think you've issued about twice as many knockout punches to Jason than he's returned. You've gotten some pretty good one-liners in on him.
Yeah, I feel like I'm definitely ahead. Like I'm probably like 8-0 up or something. He hasn't. his trash talk is terrible towards me. Whether he's just like too much of a wuss to say anything, I'd rather him fight back a little bit. But he's a good character, because he can take it, and it wouldn't be as fun if obviously he took everything to heart. So it's definitely fun, and someone like him and his character, it is just fantastic for an event like the Moscone Cup.
I think Jason Shaw, whether I don't care if he turns into Carl Boers and just doesn't play pool at all anymore. Jason Shaw has to have a permanent spot on the Moscone Cup just because he's so good at trash talking and just because he's such a colorful character. He is perfect for the Moscone Cup.
Yeah, but no disrespect to Cole, but and I'd say this to Cole's face as well, but Jason still very much justifies himself on the team as a player, with his recent win at the International Open. So he's, like I said, he's a great character for it, but he backs his trash talk up with fantastic play. He was extraordinary at the World Cup of Pool. Like, Great Britain didn't get too far, but you could just watch how he was playing. Obviously, you have to rely strongly on your partner as such, but he's a strong player. And, like I said, his trash talk is heavily justified, and he really earned his place on the Moscone Cup this year.
I agree, and that's kind of an interesting, I guess, going back to kind of what I said with you lying some really good one-liners on him. I remember back, I want to say it was late August, I remember seeing on Jason Shaw's page that he cannot wait for the Moscone Cup, and I remember you commenting on there, did you buy tickets to watch the event? And I thought that was the most hilarious thing ever. And at the time, you may or may not have been too far off of being correct. I'm not going to say a tough year, but he hadn't had the Jason Shaw kind of year that we've seen over the last few years. And he probably was on his way to probably being a spectator. And then he, like you said, he goes to the International Open, and he won the tournament the weekend before that too, and he won them in kind of spectacular fashion, where he lost kind of early in the tournament and then came just storming through the one loss side, beating anybody and everybody. I don't know if he would have made the team if he didn't have those 2 weeks.
Well, the thing is, and it's becoming quite apparent now that, you know, you make the team and you earn your space on the team. And, you know, it's not like how it was like years ago where you just get on because you're from England and because we're a British company and things like that. It's different. Things are changing now. You know, we're making it so every player has opportunities, and 2020 is going to be like a real big year for us where we make some strong announcements on, you know, how players do get in, and we make it better for everyone as such. And I think Jason was very much kind of aware of the situation where, you know, he needs to travel and it's tough. He's got, you know, a young family and he's, you know, has two children that he needs to sort of look after, and it's hard for these players to be able to travel. But because he is such a strong player, obviously he backs himself a lot, and he has that great confidence about him, and I'm so pleased that he managed to, you know, win that International Open, because it, like I said, it justified his place on the team. And even though his year may have been a little bit ropey as such and he wasn't travelling, but, you know, it just shows that he's still got a lot of fight left in him, and he's, you know, he's not hanging up the gloves or anything. It's just, you know, the beginning for him.
Yeah, definitely. And he has the blessing and maybe the curse of being from Europe, where it seems like every single year you could almost make up two, maybe even three Moscone Cups that have a real chance of beating the USA any given year.
Definitely. There is a strong pool of players, I must say. I think this year we were talking about it when we were in Russia, the multi-sport team, obviously ahead of like the qualification announcements. And we were just saying there were so many different players that could have made the team. There was Fedor, there was Ruslan, there was Ralph, and there was just this huge amount of players to, you know, that could make it. And either way, it was going to be like a strong team sort of regardless. And it's fantastic that we have such strong players coming out of Europe. And something that we are potentially working on in 2020 is to try and mimic this, the USA. You know, we're not going to run before we can walk, but it's important that we take these necessary steps and try to do that for both of the teams. And to be able to, you know, grow that and to have this strong qualification criteria or just a strong pool of players.
Yeah, and of the names that you just rattled off there, I think my two favorites besides, I mean, if I had to replace any two players on the team currently and I had to choose one, I would probably choose either Albin Ocean or David Alkaidi, who I think David Alkaidi is just a monster killer. It just seems like the bigger the stage, that dude just doesn't miss. Same with Albin Ocean, but it's almost a curse to have so many monsters to choose from every year.
Yeah, definitely. You know, David Alkaidi's the reigning World Pool Masters champion, and the final drawn in so many viewers this earlier this year against Alex Kazakis, and it was a fantastic final
that bank
just
shot
really showed the level of play. Oh my god,
that he bank
deserved
shot.
You know, no disrespect to Kazakis, but, you know, David deserved that win, and rightly so. But, yeah, you know, he was runner-up for the Kremlin Cup against Tyler Spire, and, you know, he played strong. And, you know, he is a very strong player. And it's tough for USA because, like you said, they have so many strong players coming out of Europe. And, well, it's even tougher for those players themselves because they have such strong competition to try and get into the biggest event of the year.
So I guess with that, we can kind of start taking a look at the actual event since it's a couple days away now. And Moscone is now officially sold out.
That is correct. Yeah. I was getting hourly sort of updates every day this week, and especially during the warm-up match. And we got to the point of last week where we only had about 6 tickets left for Thursday for Thanksgiving. And then it was literally the first hour of the warm-up match on Wednesday where we just completely sold out. And, you know, we did actually officially sell out the other week, but obviously we hold a few tickets up our sleeve for, you know, production holds and if we need to, you know, any sight lines for any cameras. And, we managed to release a few to go back on sale, and I think I put like 8 back on sale and they just went instantly. So we're not lying about the fact that it is sold out, because, you know, in previous events we've always got to the point where throughout the event it manages to sell out because we have walk-ups and there's so much talking point. But this is the first time in, you know, a good couple of years where we have actually sold out ahead of the event. You know, we're inundated with messages of people saying, oh, you know, I booked my trip, but I didn't book my tickets because I just expect to turn up on the door. But, like, I'm sorry, we can't accommodate. We can't get any more seats in there. It'd be silly to do that anyway. But, you know, this arena is going to be completely full, which is fantastic for, obviously, the likes of this event and the years moving forward, because we know that we're going to be able to fill out these capacities. And we've also created the demand for it.
Absolutely. I knew that after the U.S. won last year, and I thought the U.S. winning last year was the best thing that could have possibly happened for the Moscone Cup, because it kind of creates that buzz again where, like, Europe can probably win the next 2 or 3 years in a row, or the U.S. could win the next 2 or 3 years in a row, but that buzz will still be there because it is a competition again. Losing, what was it, 8 years in a row, it kind of took the spark out of it, but now it is a fierce rivalry again, and people are really excited. And Matchroom, you guys are doing an amazing job to highlight it. These tickets aren't going to last very long, I don't think, going forward in the next few years.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, the demand's huge for it. And, you know, we're already looking at the arena size for next year, and we're looking at a capacity of 3,000. You know, we were 2,500 last year at Ali Pali. And we could, you know, just add a couple more hundred and know we're definitely going to sell it out. But, I mean, our kind of motto is go big or go home. Like, why not? Let's set a goal. We like to be able to have high, you know, set high goals and achieve them. And, you know, let's have a 3,000 seated capacity and let's sell that out. And it's just fantastic that we've got 1,600 here in Mandalay Bay, and that will be full every day. And it is, it's great for the game. And like what you said, obviously Team USA were on the struggle for a good few years now. And even for the fans, and it's just especially like viewing figures, you know, it was becoming, you know, uncompetitive and it wasn't enjoyable to watch. You know, people would be tuning out because it was so one-sided. And it's, you know, some of the European fans love to see, you know, spank the Yanks as such, but it's not good to be one-sided like that. It needs to have some competition, and Team USA obviously brought that to the table last year, and it made it exciting. You know, we overran on the last day instead of cutting the day as such, and I foresee that that's how it's going to start. You know, that's how it's going to move forward, because the way that we start working for sort of qualification and how we pick the players is just going to help this moving forward and help, you know, make Team USA and Team Europe stronger.
Did I just hear that right? You guys' motto was spank the Yanks. I'm gonna have to have a talk with Jim Telfer. That sounds like something he came up with.
That's not my motto. Yeah, I think I've just seen it somewhere. I've been going around saying that. I've definitely just seen that somewhere.
That just sounds like something Jim Telfer came up with. I'm gonna have to have a talk with him. So, yeah, I mean, it's great. So what is the actual capacity for the Mandalay Bay Arena then?
This year it's 1,600. Plus, we're trying out something a bit different. We've got sort of a viewing platform just to see how we sort of... It's important for us to look at how we evolve these arenas and how we evolve the seating capacity, because, you know, when we go over to London and we're looking at 3,000 people in this arena, there's, with a 9-foot table, there's only so much you can do and only so high rows you can do. And, you know, maybe it's time we start looking at doing, like, boxes, you know, when you go to, like, a marina and looking at different designs. There's no point in sort of being lazy and just thinking, well, we've got a concept, let's kind of stick with it. But it's time when we start to develop and we start to evolve and, you know, we change these arenas up. And so with this sort of viewing platform, we'll probably be looking for more 1,600, 1,700. So it's exciting.
Yeah, especially, I mean, heck yeah. This is the future of pool. There's nothing bigger in pool than the Moscone Cup. So let's make this as big as we can make it, right?
Exactly, and that's our aim. It's just, like I said, we can sit back and do what we do, probably churn at 60 or 70% and know we're going to do a good job because the events, you know, have come into their own. They do well, but at the same time, we can't just sit down and do that. In order for this sport to grow and evolve, we have to be working our, you know, be on our A game all of the time. And this pool has just such a big potential and it doesn't get the credit that it deserves. And it's just such a shame that it, you know, it doesn't get the viewing figures, it doesn't get the full capacities that it should do. You know, when you look at 2015 at Tropicana, from 1,000 seat of capacity to now at Mandalay Bay to 1,600, you know, that's great that we've grown it to an extra 600 seats and we're actually selling it out. So we just have to keep thinking forward and keep thinking how we're going to move this further and how we're going to increase more prize money. What new tournaments are we going to do and how are we going to keep the standard of play at its highest? You know, this is the best event in the industry and the competition should also be the best. So it should keep pushing. That's our aim really at Matchroom.
This is going to be the first year that, well, I shouldn't say the first year, but you guys did increase the prize pool this year for the players. So you are kind of walking the walk with what your stated goals are for not only the players, but the game, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. And we've kind of set a trend for our Matchroom pool events this year. And the way that we look at it is every event that we've done in the past year, we keep hitting our own record viewing figures. You know, we sell out our capacities and the games are, well, the tournaments are evolving and they're more enjoyable and we're getting bigger sponsorship in. And so when that happens, that's when prize money increases. So that's our aim and that's what we choose to do. And, you know, we upped the prize money for the World Pool Masters this year and obviously for the Moscone Cup for this year as well. And it also just gives, it hasn't increased, you know, in the entire time that it's been going for the Moscone Cup. And it kind of baffled me that we hadn't done it sooner, to be honest. But hitting record viewing figures last year and it being such a successful event, it felt like the best next step forward. And I think the players appreciate it and it's exactly the direction that we're going in and should be going in.
So that is a kind of a perfect transition into you're trying to obviously set more records this year. It is going to be available again in the US, which is obviously the predominant listening base to this podcast, but it's going to be available on DAZN, if I have that right?
Yes, DAZN is our platform for the US, as well as in Germany, Austria, Japan, Spain. And so it's obviously a great viewing platform. And I think people get a bit confused on DAZN because obviously in pool, there's this, you know, pay-per-view kind of stream that is quite apparent throughout all of the tournaments. And, you know, we've never really liked to go down that route. But it's really important for everyone to understand that DAZN isn't a pay-per-view, you know, platform. You can subscribe to DAZN, watch the entire Moscone Cup on it, but you've also got all of these other sports that they're putting on, you know, the boxing and things like that, and you actually get so much more out of it. Whereas if people actually like researched a little bit into it, you'd see that you get so much more than, you know, what you think you're getting. And also if you subscribe to DAZN, you can get the Moscone Cup and then you can carry on and get the World Pool Masters next year, for instance. And that's something that we're working on, and it's not our aim to, you know, not always provide a free stream for everyone, but we need to take a step back and we need to understand that, you know, people have to pay a ticket to go to an event. If, you know, if I'm in Vegas and I want to go see Britney Spears or Celine Dion, I can't just rock up and expect to get in for free. You know, these events, you know, people should buy a ticket to get into these events, and free tickets aren't a thing anymore. And that's great that, you know, we sold out this year because it creates that demand as well. You know, more ticket sales is an increase in prize money. And even more so, the more viewership that we create and we get in, you know, the better and the more the tournaments will evolve as such. And I think it's just important that, you know, people obviously subscribe to Sky Sports in the UK, and you can get Sky Sports Arena, you can get Sky Sports movies and things like that. So everyone, you kind of just need to remember that everyone buys these TV packages, and perhaps Paul has always just been in this Facebook stream kind of mindset, and we probably need to just take a little step back, realize that the sport is evolving and it is developing, and we need to professionalize it. You know, these are the best athletes in the industry, and that's how these events should be. They should be the best of the best.
Believe it or not, these productions aren't exactly cheap. I mean, I'm not asking you to talk about the numbers that it takes to put these things on, but I mean, this is a huge production you guys have done. If you've ever been to any of the Matchroom events, it's not like you're just throwing out a inferior product. You guys go above and beyond to make sure that all of the production for these events, both in the arena itself, but also, you know, on the streaming services as well, it's professional quality. You guys aren't throwing out a bad product.
Exactly. You know, when people are tuning in, we expect them to have the best. And, you know, we also forget that the production quality has to be of high standard. You know, we're broadcasting this to over 100 countries in the world. And this isn't just going onto a Facebook platform and, you know, on people's laptops. This is going into people's homes on their TVs through broadcasters. And so it has to be to a, you know, a certain spec. And that's how, you know, the standard of our tournaments are. And also, and it's one thing that we've probably neglected over the years, and it's something that personally, like, really trying to work on, is fan engagement within the arena. We've always been so set on catering to those who are sitting at home watching the TV, even though they are important, because, you know, if they can't make it over to the event. But we have to make it enjoyable for the people in the arena. They are the paying fans. They are the ones that come along and they want to enjoy it. But at the same time, we need to make sure they can see the action. We need to make sure they're having fun in the breaks. We need to make sure that they've got a nice, you know, if they want to come along and have VIP and have, you know, food and things like that, then that's stuff that we would like to put on for them. So, you know, with increased production and increased and bigger venues and bigger arenas, obviously comes, you know, higher costs. But, I mean, I woke up 2 days ago, had a meeting in regards to sort of the rigging here. I got rid of, I think, one truss or something, and it meant that me and the team could eat that night. So that's how expensive stuff is. Yeah.
I do want to get to next the free work that you guys do, because you're not just, you know, charging for all your stuff. I mean, you guys just had a match with CSI for a warm-up that, you know, you streamed absolutely for free. And even when, you know, you guys had some technical difficulties, you basically stopped it to make it, you know, available the next day so that it's free for the next day, because you wanted to get that product out there. I'm assuming that's why you did it the next day. So you guys are trying to get out free products as well to grow the game.
Of course. You know, when we've got the opportunity to do that, we jump at it. So we obviously, this warm-up match is, you know, turned into sort of a day where we give, you know, a team the experience, but also it's a great sort of warm-up and sort of tease and highlight ahead of the event. And we had obviously originally proposed to have two sessions one day. Obviously we had some technical difficulties and our stream was lagging, and it was important for us to put out a high quality production. And we got to the point where, and it was driving me crazy, where we're going to be back in 5 minutes, we're going to be back at this time, and we just kept delaying and delaying. And you know, it comes to the point where you go, right, why are we doing this? We're doing this because everyone at home wants to watch this warm-up match. Okay, so we can't do it when the stream keeps lagging. So, you know, we look at it, we have to make a decision. And so we chose to stop it because obviously it wasn't great for the fans, and, you know, we want them to tune in the next day. And also there was a point of it worked actually better for the time difference for Europe as well. But at the same time, you know, we incurred a lot of more costs for that. You know, we had internet issues. We went out and actually bought internet, you know, personal hotspots, and reconfigured things for the next day. We also had to pay more accommodation costs. We had to change flight costs. And that was all purely because we wanted to provide a good, high-quality stream for everyone, and not one that was just, you know, like we basically we were at the point where the production team said to me, okay, we can go ahead with it, but you're basically risking it not being high quality, and we could put it out low quality, and the internet will be fine. No, that's not what we do. We have to stop, rethink, and come up with a solution and make sure everyone gets high quality. So that, you know, we like to think that, you know, we try to offer a free platform and things like that when we can do. So the warm-up match was sort of perfect for it.
And it may have even been good for the U.S. to maybe wait a day anyways. The U.S. wasn't exactly coming out firing on all cylinders in that first day. They were struggling a little bit.
I couldn't watch for a little bit. I was thinking, oh, goodness me, what's going to happen? But, you know, they just were coming into their own. And it was like a kind of pick-a-mix team sort of thing, like, because it was obviously sponsored by Q Sports International, and CSI picked, you know, the team, and they had no restrictions as to who they wanted to pick. So it wasn't like it had to be against an England team like we did last year. So it, like I said, it was kind of like a mixed match of players, and it kind of throws USA off of their game a little bit. But, you know, they got into it, and it gave them a good sort of practice ahead of the, you know, ahead of the Moscone that starts on Monday.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned the All-London team last year. If I'm not mistaken, I think the All-London team had Team USA down pretty big, and the U.S. actually won 4 or 5 straight points to end up sneaking the win out for that one. So maybe there's a trend the U.S. doesn't play well in these and then comes out playing well. Who knows?
Yeah, who does know? None of us know what's going to happen day one of the Moscone. I mean, no one knows. There's no point even trying to guess. I think you just got to, you know, I thrive off of that kind of thing. And so, like, we all do. And the adrenaline you feel when you're just in that arena, whether you're a player, whether you're a fan, whether you're working on the event, it's intense. And, you know, this is what we all live for.
I know that I just cannot wait to get on a plane and get down there. I am so excited for this event. Last year was my first Moscone Cup, and I do not want to miss one ever again.
That's good to hear. That gives me little goosebumps on my arm. I just love hearing people say that they look like going to the Moscone Cup, and yeah, it's fantastic.
Absolutely. So I guess we cannot let you get out of here without a slight prediction, right?
I'm trying to remain unbiased. I mean, I am sitting here wearing red Nike tracksuit, even though I always just think, like, what color am I going to wear? So I'm going to look like I'm trying to be biased if I'm being like red or blue, but I don't know, you know, because I was very in favor of Team USA last year because I just saw a change in them and it was different. But I see that again this year, you know, Justin Berger making the team, and I'm excited that Justin's on it. I spent Tuesday and obviously Wednesday and Thursday at Griff, you know, watching the players just like chill out with one another, just, you know, practicing together. They work well, and it's good them coming in a week prior because they just bounce off one another. There's 5 different characters in that team and they all work together nicely. But that's not to say, you know, Team Europe are strong, but they've also got some young, you know, players on there that aren't the experienced ones. You know, Albin has been so experienced in these events, and obviously, you know, he's not in the team this year. And someone like Kazakis and Klenti, it's only their 2nd time coming in. You don't know how it's going to go.
Same with Filler, too. This is only Filler's 2nd year.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I don't want to predict. Don't make me do it.
Aww. You just made all the people sad. But I suppose that's also kind of your role as the promoter for the event too, right? You got to stay unbiased. You got to deal with these people all year long.
I know, right?
If it makes you feel any better, I have not given my official prediction for the podcast yet either. I'm still mulling it around. It's so hard. It is really hard to choose.
Okay, well, when I see you, then you can tell me exactly what you predict.
And then
I'll secretly tell you what I predict. Yeah, by Monday.
That sounds perfect. So you did name We'll get you out of here pretty soon, but there is one thing that you note. I remember you saying on the stream for the CSI and Team USA match was that you have already announced some of the World Pool Master participants. Did you want to tell the listeners some of those people that are going to be in the World Pool Masters next year?
Yeah, World Pool Masters is back in Gibraltar, back at the Rock, I say, 26th to the 29th of March. And like what I said, for 2020, you know, things are changing. We're trying to evolve our tournaments better. And we do have the qualification criteria. Again, we've got 8 spots where the players, you know, do get in off of the back of that. So we've got Joshua Filler, who's US Open champion, Fedor Gorst, European. We've got Jason Shaw and Shane, who are in because obviously they are fantastic and they get 2 of the invites. And David Alcady, obviously reigning champion. So they are our first players. And a sneaky little one, I think I said it off the cuff on the stream, was Alex Paguilayan as well. He'll be representing Canada. But there's also, you know, the world number one female player as of, you know, 31st of December. And that is so exciting for this event. Obviously, I'm slightly biased being a woman myself, but I've been following Simin Cheng all year and I would love to see her in the event. And I really hope that's something that she can, you know, get into. And maybe if she doesn't make that spot, you know, there's a strong chance for her making, you know, a wild card invitational. So I think this is what the World Pool Masters should be evolving into. I keep saying it's like the superstars of pool. You know, we're bringing in the younger players and it's gone from 16 to 24. There's a higher prize money. There's like an early round. If you qualify into the event, you go straight into the second round. And this is what the event should be. It shouldn't just be, you know, 16 players from around the world. It should be the best of the best. And that is what it is changing into. Obviously, like I say, we can't run before we can walk. We have to do things gradually. But I've got a good feeling about the World Pool Masters. It's moving in a really, really sexy direction. And I always refer to our events as sexy because it's like the arenas are cool and things like that. But it is evolving. And every match last year, well, this year, was exciting at the World Pool Masters, you know, tweaking the format slightly. And, you know, that's what it should be doing. And look forward to it in March.
Yeah, and there is one thing in there that I wanted to cover on, and that was the Simin Cheng comment. I cannot echo that enough. Simin Cheng has shown over the course of the last year to year and a half that she is just as good as just about any single male player that you could come out with. And when watching her play on streams, the US Open, for example, she is treated as a woman. And I think that that's very unfortunate to the game of pool, because while, yes, she is a woman, she plays just as good as anybody else. And she should. I think that we need more women represented in this game going forward. And that is one thing I love about Matchroom and you specifically, is that you really do highlight and try to get women involved as much as possible. I think that bringing in last year, you had 2 women in the World Pool Masters. I love to see that. And I love to see that all of the long stereotypes of this is a man's game are kind of getting broken down. Mm-hmm. That makes me very, very happy.
Definitely. And like I said, it's probably a little bit of bias. I think when Barry and I ever discussed the events, he's like, oh, Carl and Emily sort of thing. I'm like, no, you know, this is open to both female and male. And I'm going to guarantee there will be 2 women next year. I really hope Simin makes world number one. It gives me an invitational for someone else as well, because there are so many high quality players out there. And I just love the fact that Simin kind of has that confidence about her, that she goes, you know what, I'm as good as these blokes. And I can go out there and she just has that confidence. And that's what us women should be doing. And why not get, you know, some people might see it as unfair that, you know, we give women the opportunity to play into the event. But that's what should be happening. And I think it's just fantastic. And that's how we should be moving the sport forward.
Well, the conversation that we had off air, it's good to see women get some of those opportunities, since some of the men in this game have been getting those for years now when they really haven't been deserved. So it's good to see some of the women get those opportunities, but we don't have to go into that. The last thing I want to
let's not start a big debate.
Yes, of course. The last thing I would like to talk about before I let you go is the U.S. Open next year. I am under the impression that the U.S. Open is completely full already.
Oh my goodness. We kind of like set goals in the office, right? We have this huge whiteboard and we've moved into this bigger office because obviously we're growing. Our team is evolving as well. And we're changing things in the office and we've got this big whiteboard that sits in the room and we note all of our goals on there. And obviously we were coming up for the US Open announcement. We were like, right, okay, this is the goal. It is, we will sell the player field out before we reach the Moscone Cup. And I like to think we set like reasonable goals, but also, you know,
it's been full for months.
We like to set our goals high. Exactly. And one of our goals as well was to sell out the Moscone Cup this year. And, you know, we keep kind of just ticking them off and, you know, they're reasonable sort of goals and setting. And it's just fantastic. Like the amount of messages we get where it's players that, I don't want to name names. I'm not going to name names. I feel bad. But it's players that, you know, professional players that are very well known that have missed a spot and they're messaging us saying, you know, we need a spot. No, I'm sorry. This is the US Open. If you do not sign up within, you know, it's first come, first serve. There's no favoritism. There's nothing like that. And that's how it should be. And 256 players. I mean, you know, when we kind of sold out, I was kind of sitting there and we were discussing, you know, going up to the next level. And we were looking in like the 500 mark. And we said, no, come on, let's be sensible about it. It's only our second year. Let's keep selling this out for a few more years. You know, we're not going anywhere. If anything, Matchroom Pool is expanding. Matchroom Pool is growing. So let's sell this out. Let's keep it how it is. And we'll take it to the next level when we're ready to do so. And it's important to do it, like I said, when we're ready, because we have to execute these events to a high standard. You know, we can't just talk the talk and not walk the walk as such. So we've got high goals for the US Open, but next year it's going to be exciting. We're looking at a few more cameras in the double elimination stage. Just, you know, a few tweaks that we take constructive feedback and we say, okay, what worked and what didn't work. And if anyone thought that the US Open was good this year, you are in for a hell of a surprise next year, because it's just going to be 10 times better.
Is that possible? Can you guys? Yeah. There were a couple hiccups, but you guys were awesome with the US Open last year. How much better can it get?
That is true, but no. To be fair, we were bloody brilliant, but there's always room for improvement.
Yes,
always room for improvement. The timekeeping, we got to an absolute T, which was everyone's doubt. But I love the doubts, because it just makes us even more passionate and it gives us more drive to, you know, excel.
You, not only do you do amazing work, you are incredible at hyping your events. I was excited for the Moscone Cup. I don't even care about the Moscone Cup anymore. All I care about is the US Open next year.
Yeah, I think I just get myself all sort of geared up for it. But I like the pool balls, like the new Aramis Black set, which I'm, do you know what?
There's something to talk about. I completely forgot about that.
Well, we're not going to divulge too much into it, but I will say I totally get everyone's opinion on it. And you know what? Everyone is totally entitled to their opinion. You know, these things are, it's like Marmite. You either like it or you don't like it. And I understand like the hardcore fans and the players as such, but personally, the Matchroom events, you know, the four ball has always been pink for us. And, It's just a fresh breath of air for us. And I think it's kind of everyone's just adapting and, you know, people have their opinions, which is fine. The players all hated them at first. I mean, Team USA and Team Europe for the Moscone. Now they're like turning around and, you know, they do tell me their honest opinion. So they're not just kind of saying it for the sake of it. But as far as I'm concerned, everyone's talking about it. which is absolutely fantastic for the game. You know, I think these players are smart. They're not going to miss the order of the shots. They're not going to go in the wrong order. And it's great, you know, we're testing them and we're upping their game as such. But like I said, everyone's entitled to their opinion. I get why people have the ump over it, but it's new. We're evolving, you know, so let's just take it and move on.
Yeah. And with how good you are at roasting your players, I guarantee that if they shoot out of order once, you will never let them hear the end of it. They will never do it again.
No.
No.
Maybe.
The balls are the colors that they are the way that they've switched. And this is maybe something that doesn't get highlighted as much as it maybe could or should be. The balls aren't changing colors for no reason. They're changing to kind of be more inclusive to the people who are watching TVs. Not all people have, you know, the same visual abilities that others have. The balls, the way that they are right now, they're able to be picked up by people who are more colorblind, right? I mean, that's part of the reason for the changing of the colors.
It was, you know, it's obviously been a while since we've, you know, made any sort of big changes to the ball set. And I think what people forget is that we obviously have to accommodate to our TV audience, broadcasters from around the world. And it was getting to the point where it was getting tough to differentiate the 3, the 4, and the 5. And we had to make a decision on how we do that. And obviously there's some slight adaptations to the other colours that have remained the same, but obviously a bit of a tweak in, you know, just the different level of the colour as such. But this is why we did it. We did it for viewership. We didn't just do it because we were bored in the office and thought, oh, let's just annoy everyone in the pool world turn the 5 into the purple. But, you know, we did it for a reason. And it wasn't just we sat there and said, let's just do it like this. It was a long process that took like a good 6 months, you know, working together with Aramis. And we ended up coming to this, you know, together. And it works nicely. And, you know, like I said, it's not just for the pool room. This is for a wider scale of audience. And we mustn't forget that we are also trying to draw in these casual viewers as well that want to tune in and then all of a sudden go to a pool hall and go and, you know, enjoy a game of pool with their friends, like what happened, you know, what's happened with darts. And darts has turned into such a sociable thing in pubs in the UK and, you know, around the world. That's what we're trying to do with pool. We have to make this audience bigger for us to evolve this sport. And so there's a lot more behind the scenes, and it wasn't just us to annoy everyone as such.
That's very well said.
Open mind. Let's all have an open mind about it.
and you cannot argue. I whether you like the balls or whether you don't like the balls, there is nothing better in the world than hearing Carl say, "Oh, he's got a tough shot on the bumblebee." It's the greatest.
I love the nine ball. I think it's brilliant.
He's calling it the bumblebee. It's so funny. Well, I guess with this, we can wrap this up. I know that you're incredibly busy, and I thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to sit down and chat with me.
Yeah, of course. Anything for, you know, the sport. And I have had like a few dozen people coming in and out and sort of looking at me waiting sort of thing. I've got these little post-it notes going, I'll be 15 minutes, I'll be 10 minutes and stuff. Yeah. But all good. I'm going to get back to the arena build, and I will see you on Monday.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you again, Emily.
You're welcome.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Cue Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com. And Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.